Hey everyone, we are into our second to last podcast. We're going to finish up our notes and finish up the letter of 1 John, and then the next podcast we will go through Karen Jobe's last bit of her exegetical commentary over the same content. So without further ado, let's wrap up. We are in verse 14 here. And just a few things I wanted to point out. John says, and this is his will. This is God's will, or this according to his desires. Kata ta thelema autu, according to his desires. Now, this is important because John is talking about asking according to God's desires. And so we're not just talking about asking for anything and you'll receive it. And this is important as well when we see the phrase aonti, anything or whatever we ask. This phrase is not in a vacuum. It is not without context. So this cannot be interpreted as anything we ask for we will get, but rather anything we ask in accordance with his desires. So that's the important thing here. It's not we don't have a Burger King God. You just, get things your way and all that. And then I also noted, hey, parousia, the boldness. This boldness is found before God when we are living and asking according to his desires. It means that we have officially found that beautiful path. And then in verse 15, I took note of, Eon oidamen hati akue himon. You know that God hears you when you ask according to his desires. And just so you know, verse 15, and if we know that he hears us, whatever we ask, we know that we have what we have asked of him. Know here, oidamen, we know here, is a present active indicative. In other words, it's not a guess. This is assurance that God has heard us. We know that he hears us. Oidamen hati akue himon. Also notice echamen, we have, present active indicative. If you know that he hears you, then you know that you have what you requested. The present active indicative here gives assurance to the subjunctive whatever you asked. So we move from the subjunctive of aonti to whatever it is that you ask to the present active indicative that gives us certainty of having what you have asked for. And also, I just made note that in verses 14 and 15, you see the verbs to hear, know, and ask a lot. So that becomes the central matter of these passages. And what a way to wrap up the letter as a whole. Verse 16, I'm lost, just to be completely honest. Here's how it reads in the NIV. If you see any brother or sister commit a sin that does not lead to death, you should pray, and God will give them life. I refer to those whose sin does not lead to death. There is a sin that leads to death. I'm not saying that you should pray about that. Okay, this is terribly, just confusingly worded in Greek, and it just stands out because of the way it is written. So I just made two other notes here, because Karen Jobe's definitely going to hash this one out for me. Pros thanaton, so not toward death, not to death. Some sins are not to death, so to speak. And I can't remember what Jobe had said about this in the past, but obviously there's a distinction in, consequences of sin, if you will. I know all sins, Paul says, the wages of sin is death. So we must have to read this in some kind of different rendering than that to make sense of this, if John is telling us that there are some sins that do not lead to death. And then we have aitese, NIV is saying, let him or her pray for his brother or sister and God will give him life. But the word that they're interpreting for pray here, or translating for pray, is normally used for like ask or take up. So I thought that was weird that they chose ask or take up as prayer here. And then verse 17. All unrighteousness or wrongdoing is sin. So verse 17, all wrongdoing is sin, and there is sin that does not lead to death. Pasa adikia hamartia istin. All wrongdoing is sin. Wrongdoing is sin, and sin is wrongdoing, is how I can read this. Pasa and estin also are third person singular, highlighting that it is each individual wrongdoing that is a sin. We also get the emphasis that adikia is not a sin that leads to death, so we should not assume that all hamartia is the same. So I wonder what Paul would have to say about that. In the verse 18, auton, did you see here? What does auton refer to here? The NIV translates these pronouns as them. We know that anyone born of God does not continue to sin. The one who is born of God keeps them safe, and the evil one cannot harm them. They say them here as if it's plural. Auton is singular here. I wonder what it's referring to then, and why the NIV translates these pronouns as them. Also, did you see ha gegenemenas and genethes? Are these talking about two different people? The one being born of God and the one who was born of God? I don't know, these passages are just getting really confusing to me to know who we're talking about here and what in the world is going on. Who is them? And what are we talking about right now? Who is it that keeps them safe? And the one who keeps them safe, is that a different person? But I did see ha poneras. This takes on a substantival form. So when you have ha, the definite article, the, we know we are not just talking about evil in an abstract way, but rather the evil one. And then uch haptetai. So the present active indicative, the evil one cannot touch, or in fact does not touch those who have been born again, even in the present. We may stumble, but never defeated. And then verse 19, John unleashes a few final, quote-unquote, we know that type of phrases, oidamen, we know that, to reassure his congregation in these final passages of reassurance. And he says, we are of God. We have one final emphasis that his congregants who remain are of God. That is, they have God as their source of strength and maintain the apostolic teachings about him. There's also emphasis again about the world and how it is attributed to total darkness. What are we to make of the word ketai, though? Ketai, the whole world rests in the evil one? The whole world lies in the evil one? I think John uses this verb to mean the same thing as like origin or source. If the whole world lies or rests in darkness in this way, maybe this is talking about origin and source as well. We know that the whole world is under the control of the evil one, is how the NIV puts it. And then verse 20, hahuias tu theu heke. This summarizes chapter 1, verses 1 through 4, once again, where the incarnation and its significance takes center stage. John tells his congregants that they know this, that the Son of God has come. But now we finally have the explanation of what was just kind of like codedly announced in chapter 1. And then alethinon, true, we have this accusative singular masculine reference. And I think that because this is accusative singular masculine, it's referring back to theou, to God. So truth here is not exactly an abstract concept, but rather it's an entity that is known and became a human being. So truth here actually refers to God, if I'm interpreting this correctly. John elaborates on this entire trail of thought. He says the truth is the Son, Jesus the Christ, and it is God. Notice that God and truth are both nominative masculine here, and eternal life. So the truth is the Son, Jesus the Christ, and it is God and eternal life. So truth takes on many forms here, but it also takes on a human form, which is important here. And then last but not least, we get this very unique, maybe strange ending, if you will. Hard to know if it is connected or not even, unless the letter is more inclined to address idolatry than we think, because the letter ends with a command. Technia, so children, we get our last, very nice, compassionate plea and vocative address here from John. Phulaxata chauta apaton eidolon. So children, Keep yourself from idols. Watch out for them. Guard yourself from them. And the letter ends with a command. Isn't that interesting? And if the letter ends with idolatry, and John seems to be wrapping up final thoughts that he first brought up, then perhaps idolatry has way more importance in the letter than what we have acknowledged. And perhaps we should retrace the letter to look for those themes of idolatry as well. That officially wraps up the letter of 1 John. Can you believe we made it through all 5 chapters? Huge accomplishment, everyone. You've gone through the Greek text of 1 John and done a deep exegetical dive as well. And we'll see what Karen Jobes has to say wrapping up. And then that's going to be it for this podcast. I'm going to be moving into a different realm, looking at intersections of psychology and theology. And I hope you'll join me in that. The podcast will be taking on a new shape and a new name. And I'm not going to delete this podcast, but the podcast will change. So it'll be up to you to decide if you want to follow along with that. I want to hopefully use the future podcasts for research for a PhD, I'm hoping. So pray for me for that, and we'll see where that goes in the next couple of years. All right, take care, everyone.